Live from the Carter Subaru Studio, it is Cairo Nights. I'm G. Scott. I got Drew Barth with me today because the gang is here with Tom and Frank Shires. Beautiful Thursday night. Really appreciate everybody for listening to Cairo Nights. We'll get right to the news today, Drew. I'm not going to play any games at all because this topic that we're going to talk about, I'm very passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
Because I kind of fall into this category.
You do?
Yeah, the whole whether or not you should rent or where you should buy. Let me paint the picture for everybody right now.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you need to earn to rent an apartment in each state? Survey has come out right now. The annual Out of Reach report from the National Low Income Housing Coalition came out, analyzed every county in the United States, and have found that there isn't anywhere that someone working a minimum wage job 40 hours a week can afford a two-bedroom apartment.
Are you surprised by that?
Yes and no. Like, when I first saw it, I said, really? And then I'm like, duh. Because right now, they said in order to get a two-bedroom apartment, you need to make $22.50 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with Seattle here is $15 an hour, and you know everybody knows that the national level, $15 an hour is more than the federal level.
Sure.
So right now, a one-bedroom is affordable only with a minimum wage job in a small number of counties in Arizona, California, Colorado, Oregon, and Washington. So right now, the topic of whether or not you should rent or should you buy, NBC News, Jolene Kent on whether to rent or to buy.
In Atlanta, newlywed Dominica Reed was feeling the pressure to buy a new home.
My parents, especially, they're like, you have to buy now that you're married. There's really no excuse.
But with the key interest rate now rising 0.25 point and relatively few homes on the market, she and her husband are choosing to rent instead.
We're trying to figure out if we want to stay in the city. Like, housing costs are really, really expensive.
It's a dilemma for homebuyers nationwide. Mortgage applications have dropped dramatically, down more than 15% since last year, as the average mortgage rate rises to 4.8% just this week.
There is a trend for more people choosing to rent versus buy.
The booming economy is also driving home prices up in big cities.
Prices are increasing in those markets much faster than incomes, which means down payments are going to be higher. And that's going to lead to additional frustrations other than just finding a house.
There could soon be even more reasons for potential home buyers to rent instead. Today, the Federal Reserve indicating it plans to raise interest rates 2 more times this year.
So when could it be better to rent instead of buy? Experts say if you plan to move within 5 years, if you cannot put down between 10 and 20%, and if you have a low credit score.
Those three right there stand out to me. And the three were if, obviously, low credit score, if you don't have enough to put down. I mean, right now you're talking about 15, 20%,
mm-hmm.
10 to 20% that you have to put down. Or if you plan on moving within the next 5 years. And, of course, let's just take here in Seattle, in this area, what I see starting to happen is that the cost of living is continuing to rise, right? I mean, that's happening. But the houses are going up further and faster than our wages. I think everybody can relate to that. And what's happening is back in the day, there used to be a middle class. There is no more middle class. There's lower class, upper class, and there it is.
Well, plus the number of places that were designed initially for that middle class sort of income have now all been snapped up. All of those places that were supposed to be kind of in those surrounding areas outside of downtown Seattle in particular, kind of nearby.
Sure.
The kind of the cute little neighborhoods that are now all being swallowed up by everybody who's looking for any bit of available property, those were initially priced towards that middle income kind of route. So
right.
Basically these very blue-collar families could afford something.
I just got unlucky when it comes to timing, because when the economy crashed back in 2008, and then you're coming up out of that, and then we all know 2009, 2010, around this area, there was a great time to buy. There was inventory. It was all kinds of foreclosures that you can go ahead and pick up. But during that time, I wasn't able to afford anything at that time. Now, I wish today was like then. Then I would have been okay. Mm. But because I'm kind of too late, I know some others that are kind of too late, I know some kids that are just coming out of college, you know, finished their internships, got jobs, just getting out into the market. These young 20-year-olds, mid-20s, early 30s, they're out here. They got to go rent now, which I don't think necessarily right now it's a bad idea. It's the idea that I choose to go with yourself, Drew. Your choices on the rent to buy.
Well, right now, my wife and I, we are nearing the end of our lease. We live in Greenwood, and our rent is going up again. And we can feel ourselves starting to get squeezed out. You see that people who need to be closer to the city are willing to pay a little bit more. And now as we're starting to look at our future and thinking about, you know, I'm 35, my wife is 29. We're starting to think about, you know, actually going and getting something and looking at houses. But it's not going to be in near the city of Seattle, I can tell you for that. For
100%.
Sure.
And look, I think we can all agree. Hey, like I said, it would be phenomenal and fantastic if some of us, and I'm sure some of you did, but I didn't and you didn't, would have purchased homes, purchased property between the times of 2008, 9, during that time when the housing market kind of went down. Mm-hmm. And then now this market here, it is on fire. And for those that are benefited from, well, God bless you. Good, phenomenal. And for those that, I mean, now, you still have to be able to pay your bills in a place where rents went through the roof. Mm-hmm. We all know where that's going. Mm-hmm. It is very expensive to live here, whether you have a house or not. And if you're renting, you're definitely paying top dollar. I had a friend of mine just recently had to make a choice. His rent went up $450 a month.
When we talked not too long ago about those massive influxes in cash, the kind of thing that will just throw a massive wrench into your life and this will mess up your entire financial outlook. $450 a month makes a huge difference.
Now, his thing, it was beneficial for him to stay than to leave and go because he was based on because the deposit that he put down back then was not as big. Mm. But the new deposit that he would have had to put down and the new rent was just as close. It was just like, Had to bite the bullet and pay the $450 extra a month. Talk about not being in control.
There was a comic I worked with who had this bit that I really liked where he said, you know, I always dreamed of owning a million-dollar home. I just didn't think it was going to be a two-bedroom, one-bathroom, fixer-upper kind of feeling. It's just changed. The idea, I remember going to college and having that feeling like, well, by the time I get done with school, I really love Seattle, and I feel like there's got to be a neighborhood around here that will fit me when I graduate. And when I look at these college kids now, when they finish up, where do they go in this city? How could they possibly try and stay close to downtown Seattle?
I have no idea. I have no idea because, like you said, you can't unless you come out of college and you're making, I think, what does it cost? $86,000 for you to be able to live in the Seattle area. That's by yourself, median home.
Right.
Now, some people, and how I used to be, I used to have to have a roommate, right? I used to have a roommate to be able to afford to live in those places. Speaking of, something that I need every day, I don't need a roommate anymore, but I do need coffee. I do need coffee all the time now. And speaking of coffee, what has happened to Seattle's Tully's? I went into a Tully's about a month ago because I knew it was in the area. I said, oh, I'll just go ahead and stop by there. And it was closed. Well, the parent company, Global Barista, stated that it was undergoing a rebranding while it closed Tully's coffee stores in March, about 15 locations in the Seattle area. The reason for the closure? This is weird. I hate to admit it. They ran out of coffee. It could also You had one job, was just to keep some coffee. It could also be because Keurig, which owns the rights to the Tully's name and product, says that Global Baristas lapsed on a licensing agreement in December of 2017, forfeiting the right to use the name. Keurig has an ongoing legal battle with the coffee company. Mm-hmm. I think there is nothing worse than having a battle on your name. Prince had that situation. Remember for a while, did not use his name.
Then he was the artist.
He was the artist, formerly known as. But, man, you're a Tully fan?
Every once in a while, I'll see a Tully's, and I have that exact same reaction I do than when I see, like, when you see a phone booth. Uh-huh. That feeling where you're like, you're not supposed to be here. There used to be more if you... But now I don't see quite as many of you, and I'm not quite sure whether or not I should go in. Were you a fan of Tully's Coffee when it was around?
No.
Really?
No, but it kind of hit the spot. I don't know. I always kind of felt weird. It kind of felt like I was visiting, like I was a tourist when I was in there. I was like, let me see. Let me have you know what? You can just get an Americano, man. It's real simple. But I'd always feel like I didn't know what I was doing in the place. So it's kind of weird.
You're too trained for the Starbucks.
I think so. I think I'm trained for the Starbucks. Bunch of news and some kind of different news that happened yesterday. I thought we were going to be talking about this today. CBS reported yesterday that Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders had planned to leave the White House at the end of the year. Basically, the report came out. It said Press Secretary Sarah Sanders and Principal Deputy Press Secretary Rod Shaw are both heading for the exits, according to the sources in the White House. I guess apparently supposed to told some of her friends, you know, how it kind of leaks and kind of get out.
Right.
Now, Sarah Sanders said, she got on Twitter and she said, does at CBS News know something I don't know about my plans or my future? I was at my daughter's year-end kindergarten event, and they ran a story about my plans to leave the White House without even talking to me. I love my job, and I'm honored to work for the President of the United States.
Now, Jacqueline Alemany, who's the CBS News White House reporter, says that Sarah Sanders, quite frankly, shouldn't be trusted on her word at this point.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders has a track record at this point of trying to pour cold water onto reports of staffers trying to leave the White House when the reality pans out quite differently.
So it definitely sounds like she's maybe not the most trusted source on information, but you could definitely see there's definitely this contention that's going on between Sarah Huckabee Sanders and the press, and it started to kind of come to a head a little bit today as there were a lot of conversations about immigrants being separated from their families, and here we go.
First of all, there is no law that requires families to be separated at the border. This was the administration's choice to move from civil matters and immigration onto criminal, to criminally prosecute people who come across the border illegally and therefore have to separate families. So why did the administration find that this was necessary? And if it continues to not have much of a deterrent effect, will you continue this policy?
Okay, so then she came back with, this is kind of the official White House policy.
The laws are the ones that have been on the books for over a decade, and the president is enforcing them. We would like to fix the broken system that our immigration and fix our immigration problem. However, until Democrats are willing to actually fix this problem, it's going to continue. But we would like to see it fixed. Our administration has had the same position since we started on day one that we were going to enforce the law. I know it was something that wasn't high on the priority list in the previous administration, but it is on ours. We're a country of law and order, and we're enforcing the law and protecting our borders. We would like to fix these loopholes, and if Democrats want to get serious about it instead of playing political games, they're welcome to come here and sit down with the president and actually do something about it.
Hold up, man. Okay. Hold on. Let's start from the very beginning. First and foremost, I don't understand why Sarah Huckabee Sanders drives so many people bad. Why do people get so upset at Sarah Sanders? Like,
okay, more so than Sean Spicer.
I mean, you get upset, and I get it, but we gotta, I mean, she's been there for a while. Mm. You know what her job is. Mm. And you know what? Truth be told, if you really want to be honest with you, I think she has the hardest job in the world. I couldn't do the job. I don't actually know anybody that could. I mean, you want to, that is, she has to have a poker face every single time she has to answer something.
It's the world's hardest performance to give because she's standing up in front of people and she has to basically be just sort of vamping on the spot and trying to come up with what she thinks are words that might be coming out of somebody's mouth, kind of what she thinks their idea should be. So basically, she's really not. She's not making any friends there anytime soon.
No, not making any friends. Now, when I first heard about it, I will say, this is probably, this is the first time that a press secretary, I believe, has gotten as much press as any press secretary ever in the past.
Right. There are very few people who, whether it was Sean Spicer or Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the number of people you could walk up to on the street and say, who is the press secretary for the United States of America? And outside of this administration, I don't know how many people could actually tell you that.
Now, you 100% right on. Now, do I think that there is a strong possibility that those rumors were true? Yes, I do think so. But at the same time, They could also not be true because we know how this works. We know, I mean, you're talking about, I think, what are they at now? 49%? 49% turnover that has happened inside of that White House since that has come. We're talking about drain the swamp. That has happened. Now, as far as all of this loophole going on with these parents and at the border and things, it's something I do believe that it's going to, somehow they're going to fix this, right? I think they're going to, I hopefully believe that they're going to come together.
Who is they?
Well, of course, at this time, they're trying to blame it on the Democrats and talking about the loophole that is going on. And I mean, they coming together, all of them, because right now this is a problem. Now, do I think that this is something that has happened before and was it going on before? Yes, I do. I do think it was going on. And as a matter of fact, during President Obama's term in office, they were deporting people like crazy during that time. I think that was one of those things where President Obama was like, all right, you know what? I gotta make nice. So here, I'll kind of give you guys a deportation of those. And so they were going ham during that time. This is something that is kind of getting out of hand. It's getting bad. It's something they're going to have to get done for sure.
Now, apparently this really finally came to blows when Playboy correspondent Brian Karam then called out Sarah Huckabee Sanders and really was going after her, not just as the press secretary, but as a mother.
Jill, don't you have any empathy?
Jill, go ahead.
Come on, Sarah. You're a parent. Don't you have any empathy for what these people are going through?
Jill,
they have less
Brian,
than you do.
Guys,
Sarah, come on.
Settle down.
Seriously.
I'm trying to be serious, but I'm not going to have you yell out of turn. Jill, please call.
It's a law, and they have, these people have nothing.
Hey, Brian, I know you want to get some more TV time, but that's not what this is
about.
I want to recognize
you.
Go ahead, Jill.
Honestly, answer the question. It's a serious question. These people have nothing. They come to the border with nothing, and you throw children in cages. You're a parent. You're a parent of young children. Don't you have any empathy for what they go through?
Jill, go ahead.
Now, go ahead.
I would just quickly will say Karam has kind of come on the defense against this, and she said, and he said that, well, I stand fully behind what I said because she will constantly bring her own personal life into the boardroom as well, or into the interview as well, and talk about kind of her own children. So he's saying that he felt like he was within his right bounds of going out and saying that.
That's politics, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there's times to bring in the right for your family, then it's time not to. But in this case, I'm quite sure Sarah Huckabee, I'm sure she has empathy for kids. Coming up next, speaking of that, all of this divide going on, I take this time to sit down with Todd Herman, Kyra Knights, G. Scott, Drew Barth. Kyra Knights, G. Scott, Drew Barth. Earlier today, I took the time to get on the Todd Herman Show, and Todd, we both decided here's a time for us to come together and start having conversations instead of always being divided against each other. And it's basically a segment on his show called Help Me Understand.
It's another way to go at discussion. My friend, colleague G. Scott's in here. G, it's good to have you in here, man.
Thanks for having me, brother. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
You know, we always have good conversations. We sit next to each other here at work. And then, in our radio lives, we live this separate life.
Well,
you know?
let's bring that together. I'm kind of nervous to start on this front because I sound like Ron Upshaw asking you a question because you happen to be black.
Ron's very good at that.
But Ron, we had a really funny moment in the office one day because G was sitting at the desk eating lunch, and one of our colleagues came over and said, G, can you come on the show? I got a question, and it had to do with something related to black culture, and G's like, wait a minute. You know, I know things other than black culture stuff, man.
I mean, Todd, I live in Seattle, right? You better know something other than that, right? You better be well-versed in other things in your life.
Yeah. So the way you set this up, and I want to give you credit for the notion of help me understand. You know, it's two cats sitting around chatting like we're at our desks.
Right.
So here's, this is a kind of a race-based question I want you to help me understand. Yeah. And truly, this breaks my heart, G. You know, when we have the mass shootings and they're in schools and there are these, there are these ununderstandable events of mass terror in these moments, they make no sense. Everybody's sickened by them. Clearly, you and I, we're dads. We're going to be sickened by them. And we disagree maybe tactically on how to handle that. We can talk about that later. But here's what I'd like you to help me understand is with people, little babies, little kids, young people being murdered in the inner cities on a regular basis. If I were a black parent, I'd be saying, what the hell? How come we don't get this attention? Why is it that when we get these unpredictable moments of these people doing this, the media wants to talk about it, we want to focus on it, everybody wants to talk about a solution. What the hell? This goes on in cities all the time, and people are just as dead. Yeah. I need you to help me understand why the black community is not saying, why are we not getting this attention?
Well, the black community does ask about the attention. I know, like, there's an example, even though it's kind of clear right now. In Chicago, you had the girls that were missing. Now, it was five girls that were missing. I think right now, at this point, two have been accounted for. Two are found dead, and one is still missing. That was going on in Chicago. And this news has been going on for some time. But I didn't find out about this, me, myself, and I'm from Chicago. I didn't find out about this until yesterday. And this has been big news locally there in Chicago.
This is five little girls.
Yeah, right. But again, two have been accounted for. Two have been found dead. And they don't know yet if they're linked. Point being is that was some big news. And really, it wasn't on a national scale. But when you had the young girl that was missing here,
yeah,
right, that was national news. So my thing sometimes, Todd, is we media, and I say we, you and I, sometimes we pick and choose on what our news is. So, for an example, you could say, or you could have said to me, maybe as of early as of yesterday, said, hey, G. Scott, you're from Chicago. Did you know about any of this? Sometimes we don't report on some news because, if you will, maybe we didn't do our due diligence and maybe we didn't find out about these things. The next thing I wanted to say is everybody, doesn't matter the color of your skin, I don't think anybody wants crime or any type of killing to affect anyone. I think we could all say we agree that we don't want any violent crime to hit our homes or our families. In the case of Chicago, violent crimes, and I know it's interesting. I know that one of the things that comes up all the time is, well, oh my goodness, you're from Chicago? Oh, Chicago must be so bad. Well, Chicago is bad, but Chicago seems worse by the way we media portray it to be. Example, in 1992, when I was growing up in Chicago, 1992, the murders in that year were close to 1,000 murders. Just this past year, it was like 570. Year before that was like 480. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, violent murder, right. Murders are down but considerably so in the cities.
Here's what I'm wanting to help understanding is, okay, though there are going to be people murdered in Chicago this weekend.
Sure.
They're going to be young and they're going to be black.
Sure. And people care.
And people do care. Yeah. And gee, I've watched the funerals. People screaming and their babies are dead.
Mm-hmm.
And there are community leaders out saying, stop it. We're taking back our streets. They're marching against the gangs. I guess what I'm really trying to understand is why, I think if I was a black parent, I would want to be saying, hey, that mall shooting's terrible, but we got 19 people, we got 20 people, we got 30 people per weekend. What the hell? This is predictable. We know who's doing this. We know where this is going to happen. You can't predict a mall shooting. Why don't we prioritize this? And what am I missing? Help me understand.
Well, I think the part that you're missing is that no matter what neighborhood you're in, you know what I mean? Like, no matter what neighborhood you're in or what side of your politics you are, you care. You care about what happens in your city, in your neighborhood, or at that mall, or anybody. Any type of news that comes on in which some young gal or some young man has had their life taken away, you still care about those things. So to help you understand is that, even though that there is, that's kind of an exaggeration. Like, there won't be 20, 30 people killed in the city of Chicago this weekend. You know what I mean? Like, I don't.
Shot.
It could be shot. Yeah.
Shot.
For sure. You know, no doubt about it. That can happen.
Yeah.
Growing up, it was worse for me. Like, when I was living in Chicago, those times were worse. But even though it was more
isolated in different parts of the city. So when they did take those projects down, and then now some just kind of they're scattered throughout the city, and so now crimes are kind of unpredictable in some of the areas where they're used that didn't used to be crime. Not that there's crime today.
So I guess I'm looking for this this seriousness of an approach to this that we always hear the conversation. Sure. All right, there's a mall shooting. We need to have a national conversation.
Right.
All right, there's some people killed in the school. We need a national conversation, national movement. We've got to start the national movement. Mm-hmm. Where's the national movement on stopping the gangs?
I think that movement has been going on for years.
I got to hear this.
As far as trying to stop gangs?
Yeah, I mean, has there been a national movement? I, with all due respect, like, and I don't want to get political, but sorry. We can. I didn't see President Obama do a hell of a lot to try to stop the gangs.
I think, what can a president? A president is the commander in chief, right?
Yeah.
In the commander in chief.
You're going to make a small government argument on there.
You know where I'm going with this, man. Well, you know, when it comes to the president of the United States, I mean, let's be real. What did President Reagan do? What did Clinton do? Well, actually, President Clinton did a lot. I mean, he really enforced drugs. That's a whole other story in itself.
We got to tell that story one day.
Oh, yeah. We got to tell that story one day. But, I mean, when I was coming up, when you talk about gangs, right? These gangs, and these are sometimes some of these young men and women join these gangs because they didn't have father figures or parental examples at home, so they wanted the feeling of belonging, right? I remember the Gangster Disciples back when I was coming up in school. They used to, out on Martin Luther King, the islands over there, they would want to keep it clean. So they would make sure that they would police that area, cleaning up things. So as much negativity, and by the way, I never belonged to a gang because you know this. I was son of a police officer and son of a probation officer, so I had no choice, right? But I did have family members that belonged to gangs. And yes, I had some family members that did some bad things. I also had some family members that did some good things that were part of gangs. So, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I learned, when I was a discipline coordinator in government school, and I worked with kids who were in gangs. What you were talking about, keeping the streets clean?
Yeah.
People don't get this, that the gangs provide structure and rules.
Yes,
you saying they provide fatherhood?
I don't want to say they provide fatherhood.
Father figure?
Some in that case. I mean, you have a young man who or young woman that's 13, 14 years old, and maybe their parents are strung out on drugs and they don't have anybody at home and they need somebody to tell them to get your butt up and go to school. Right. So say, I would say kind of father-ish. That type of deal. Now, whether or not that father figure is positive and does positive things is another story in itself, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just want to say, and I'm glad that I want to keep coming on doing this with you once a week. Here's why. I feel like today more than ever, right, even if we disagree with our politics from time to time, that doesn't mean that we disagree with every other facet in life. I mean, Todd, I mean, let's be real, man. I mean, I love cereal. I'm a Frosted Flakes fan. You might love Frosted Flakes, and we might be friends just on that.
Here's the deal, G. You're a dad.
Yeah.
Proud of your kid. And, and no, I totally agree with you, because if we'll start here on the things we agree on, we're going to get back to being a family. Because I'll tell you, G, my big thing is D.C. does not want this. They don't want you and me.
Not at all.
They don't want us coming together. Because, damn, if the people start to come together, who are they going to divide and conquer?
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So next time you come on. I want you to come in here with a hard one for me.
Okay.
To help you understand. And whatever you want, and no topic is off limits. Nothing is off limits.
Fair enough. Let's do it. Next week, I'll come with something, and I'm going to need you to help me understand.
Okay. I love it.
Coming up next. Unpopular opinion. This one you might want to stay around for, because this one's going to be a good poll. We do that next. G. Scott, Drew Barth. Kyra Knights, G. Scott, Drew Barth. One of my favorite deals that we do at 7:45 called Unpopular Opinion. Drew, what do you got for us this evening?
All right. You can have two different categories.
Okay.
All right. Your choices are either world leaders or potpourri.
Oh, let's go world leaders.
World leaders.
Yeah, I got nothing with potpourri right now. Let's go world leaders.
We're going to bust out on a Friday.
Okay. Really sounds good. What do you got?
Unpopular opinion. Kim Jong-un currently has a higher popularity rating in the United States than Colin Kaepernick.
Oh, good question right there. Kim Jong-un has a higher popularity rating than, or approval rating or popularity rating?
Let's go with popularity rating.
Okay, popularity rating than Colin Kaepernick. I'm going to agree with that. Yes, he does. As a matter of fact, I'll even go even a little further with that, Drew. I'm going to say Kim Jong-un has more popularity than Colin Kaepernick, and his approval rating is more and better than Colin Kaepernick. Because
really?
Right now, would you ever think that you would have seen a time where Kim Jong-un has been talked about in a positive light? And I think he loves this. He could still be the North Korean leader over there, the dictator over there, be the mean, whatever stuff that he does over there. But he could come to the summit, meet with the United States over there in Singapore, and kind of be a rock star.
Well, his entire basis of rule is off of this whole idea of cult of personality. So it's just all about this projection of he is the smartest person in the room. He is the most beloved person in the room. He is the one that will, the sun rises and sets for this guy. And based on the kind of footage that they could show back to their people, that's kind of the feeling that they had. They really set it up from a marketing standpoint. It looked just like that.
And he's done a great job. By the way, my man Kim Jong-un, he had the fade. You know what I mean? He had a little nice little fade. I would have brought it a little lower because it was a little too high. But he's got a nice little barber that'd probably be hooking him up. You know, he walks around with the toilet. I would have a toilet. That's kind of my thing. We talked about this.
I think you need to make some serious like style decisions when it comes to clothing and it comes to hair. When you become that, he's a fairly spherical kind of person.
Yeah,
he's a round fella.
His outfit reminds us all of the 2003 NBA draft.
Mm.
That's how all the players were dressed, just like Kim Jong-un during that time. So maybe he still thinks that it's still in style. Who knows? Fashion over there might be 2003. He current over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I honestly think that this unpopular opinion is probably true, especially, and this is going to sound strange, but for NFL fans more than anything anywhere else. Because it seems like that very much is this whole idea of like, this was something that interrupted our experience. It's easy to point the finger at the person who made our Sundays different than we were used to.
I just wonder how this is going to play out with Kim Jong-un. I mean, Donald Trump said 2.5 years, he expects denuclearization going to happen. We'll wait and see, but he does have 2.5 years. We do know that 2.5 years gives President Trump an opportunity to win the next election.
Mm-hmm.
We know about that.
Mm-hmm.
Will he denuclearize? What is Kim Jong-un's plan? What's he trying to do? Is he serious? They've offered this before in the past, maybe like 10 or 12 times. They never did it. Oh, man, this is going to be good. But the unpopular opinion, I'm going to have to say, yes, I agree with. Kim Jong-un, approval rating is better than Colin Kaepernick.
Unfortunately, I think I have to agree.
Ah, we both agree. Coming up next, we're going to talk about some bad kids. Oh, excuse me. We're going to talk about what can we as parents do better with our children? Well, we have an author to come in. We have Catherine Reynolds in to talk about that. We do that next. Kyra Knights, G. Scott, Drew Barth.